got kind of a big show for you today, guys. Welcome to the Young Turks. James Comey's been fired. Donald Trump's in a world of trouble. I'm going to tell you exactly how much trouble. I'm going to tell you why James Comey was fired in the first place. We've got the blow-by-blow description of that. Later in the show, I'll also be telling you who should run for president for the Democratic Party. Lots of fun announcements today, but I believe that we've got the big announcement that I was teasing for you guys for quite some time now. So, without further ado, I want to introduce you guys to Congressman Ro Khanna. He joins us here in the studio. Now, this is a little unusual because normally we don't have guests in the main show, The Young Turks, but we had Bernie Sanders on and we have Congressman Khanna on. I wonder why that could be. All right, Congressman Khanna is from the 17th District of California. And he recently won election against an incumbent, a very long-term incumbent. Well, Congressman Khanna, are you aware of something called the Justice Democrats?
Of course I am.
You are, the strong progressive wing of the Democratic Party that's uncorrupted by corporate and PAC money?
Absolutely.
Yes. Quick question for you. Will you join the Justice Democrats?
Yes, with enthusiasm.
Okay, so you're officially a Justice Democrat now?
I am.
Okay. One more question for you. Will you be our champion?
I would be honored to.
There's a sitting US congressman, a Justice Democrat. Now, I'm the host of the Young Turks. I'm also one of the founders of the Justice Democrats, so welcome.
Thank you. It's an honor to be on this with Bernie Sanders being your only other guest. So.
Yes. We have a lot of guests on TYT interviews, but we don't normally do it on the Young Turks, so it's great to have you here. So, as a sitting US congressman joining a new wing of the Democratic Party, that's a big, big move. Why? What do you like about the Justice Democrats?
It's time that the Democrats had a clear, bold, progressive vision, and that we had spine and willingness to stand up for those bold, progressive ideas. And that's what Justice Democrats are about. It's for Medicare for all, free public college, no corporate PAC money. This is what the Democratic Party needs to stand for.
So, you know, of course, the skeptics will say, now you can't not take corporate or PAC money and win elections. You guys are being unrealistic.
Well, I did. I didn't take PAC money or lobbyist money. And you know what happened? A lot of people in the district said, you know what, we're going to go and vote for this guy. We're going to support this guy because of that pledge. And I think Democrats across the country will realize if they take a pledge not to take PAC money, not to take lobbyist money, they're going to be rewarded by hundreds of thousands of people across this country. Bernie Sanders showed that.
So they'll also say, now wait a minute, primary incumbents hurts the Democratic Party. What's your take on that?
I've never understood that argument. And I promised, because I ran against an incumbent, and I said, look, if I get there, I'm not going to close the door on other folks. This is a democracy. These seats don't belong to me. They don't belong to anyone. They belong to people. And you ought to earn the right to represent folks. And competition makes you better. I don't understand why an incumbent is afraid. If someone wants to run against me, great. I'll go share my ideas, share my vision. It'll make our party stronger. And this is, we have a 97% incumbent reelection rate in this country. The turnover rate in the United States Congress is less than European monarchies, according to an Economist article. This is why people are so upset. And we need competition.
You know, it's ironic because now everybody who gets into office immediately wants to, of course, burn the bridge behind them. Because not all of them, but almost all of them at some point beat an incumbent.
Right.
Right. But the minute they're in, no, you can't challenge incumbents. And they say it hurts the party, but the Republican Party's been running primaries for a long, long time. They seem to be doing pretty well electorally.
And they had 17 candidates in their presidential election, and it energizes people. It gets more new ideas out there. We need new bold voices. People are going to stick up for their convictions. We need more women, more minorities. How are you going to get more women, more minorities, more progressives elected if you can never primary anyone? It was the same argument that I found so frustrating as a challenger who didn't have a famous name, didn't have connections. And I promised myself, I said, if I get there, I'm not going to make the same mistake.
Yeah, but you do have a cool name, Ro Khanna. Sounds like a Game of Thrones, either Dothraki or from Dorne or something like that. So how did you wind up winning? Because you know, Mike Honda was a very long-term congressman in California in a comfortably blue district.
Right.
So you had to take him on in a primary, and he, like you said, you had no name recognition, Dothraki or otherwise. And so how in the world did you beat him?
And here's the thing, he's a decent guy, but and this is why we can't just say, okay, you can only run if someone is a terrible incumbent, but we had differences. I supported Bernie in the primary. He was a superdelegate for Hillary. I said we need to abolish superdelegates. I campaigned on a single payer and Medicare for all. I campaigned saying I'm not going to take PAC money or lobbyist money. And we had a great debates. And at the end, I won on a progressive vision. But the party wasn't any weaker. And it wasn't some awful negative campaign. And this is where I believe that challenges will actually strengthen the party. And if they're good incumbents, they'll win. If they're good challengers, they'll win.
Yeah, and what do you think is the best way to beat the Republicans in general elections?
I think it's one to have a bold, clear vision. Look at what the Republicans have done over the last 30 years. They have not moderated their vision. They haven't been incrementalist. They've had a spine for what they believe. We need to have a clear vision of how we're going to help people. What is our policy that's going to help someone in Ohio, in Michigan? In my view, that's let's give people a massive wage increase by expanding the earned income tax credit. Let's clearly stand up for a woman's right to choose and not obfuscate that issue. Let's be very clear about issues of racial justice. Let's be very clear of a single payer and Medicare for all. Let's talk about how we're going to make college affordable by making public college free. And let's say this is our vision and we have the guts to stand up for it.
Yeah, and you know, to your earlier point about how it's not personal, it isn't. You know, Mike Hanna is a good guy, and you know, and I think we had him on a long time ago on the Young Turks, and it's just a question of which policies do we like better. I mean, that's what an election is supposed to be. So Cori Bush is a Justice Democrat nominee, right? She's a candidate, and she's running against Lacey Clay. It's not to say that Lacey Clay is a terrible person. It's just we think that Cori Bush is more progressive,
right?
And we like those, and it's a deeply blue district.
Yeah.
Paul Swearengen running against Joe Manchin now. That was announced yesterday. Now, Joe Manchin, again, I don't know him personally at all, but clearly far more conservative, right? Yep. And Paul Swearengen far more progressive. So I just don't, like you said, Congressman Kyle, I don't see why that battle of ideas hurts the party. So doesn't a battle of ideas to see what people are most excited about, driven by, and will show out to vote for a better thing for the party?
It is, but it's not a better thing for incumbents. I mean, it's if you're an incumbent now, like I am, you say, okay, I've got a 96% chance of winning. Why take a chance? But that's what people were so frustrated with in the 2016 election. They were frustrated that they didn't feel like they had a voice, that they felt the game was rigged, that they felt that people decided in a closed door who could run. And I believe that if we have these vigorous challenges, young people running, progressives running, saying that they demand a bold vision, A, you're going to have incumbents more accountable. So you're going to have more incumbents signing on to Conyers' single payer bill. You're going to have more incumbents saying, I'm not going to take PAC money. And you're going to have more people engaged in the process. In the long run, this is going to make us a better party.
So my guess is that this move will make you fairly popular with voters, right?
Well, because, hopefully.
No, and I'll tell you why. Because which voter says, no, I'd like to have less choices, right?
Right.
Which, and you said, look, you don't mind running in primaries yourself, right?
Absolutely. If someone, I've said I will debate someone who wants to run against me. I've said, let's have third party candidates. I don't understand why, if you have confidence in your vision and your record, you should not be afraid of competition. And I've never understood why people feel so risk averse about competing. This is an election's an awesome opportunity to share your vision, to connect with people, to inspire people.
Yeah, it's partly because the Republican and Democratic parties have a duopoly on power, and they don't really like to give that up. So my guess is that your colleagues might not be overly happy about this.
That's probably true.
So how do you deal with that if they come and say, how, you know, what are you doing here? You're helping a wing of the party that might primary me.
I say, look, it's not personal. In many cases, I respect the contributions of people who Justice Democrats may decide to run. In some cases, I may even think they're good incumbents who should win. But it's a philosophical principle that if we're not going to change, if we're not going to help break through the stagnation of politics and let in new voices, then we're never going to change the system. And so I would say, go run a good race. If you were a true progressive, you're likely going to win because there's so many advantages that incumbency has. In fact, welcome and embrace the competition.
Yep, absolutely. All right, now before we leave you, I heard your grandfather worked with Gandhi somehow. Is that true?
Spent 4 years in jail in Gandhi's independence movement in the 1940s.
Wow. I mean, you want to talk about a revolutionary and a guy who knows how to challenge power?
And that's, I think, what gives me a sense of perspective. You know, here he was in jail for 4 years. He spent 30 years of his life fighting for India's independence. He didn't know whether India would be free or not. And then you think of the consequences to me. So what's the end of the world? I lose an election or I don't get to be a United States congressman? It seems so inconsequential in the context of my grandfather's life. But here's what I realized from him. You have to have that level of conviction and willingness to be bold, willingness to believe in something, to have a shot at changing history. That's what we need in the Democratic Party. It's what Bernie Sanders had. It's the sense that I don't care where the chips are going to fall. I have a vision for a society, and I'm going to fight for that. And that's what animates Justice Democrats.
Absolutely. Ro Khanna, the first sitting U.S. congressman that is a Justice Democrat. Thank you so much for joining
us. Thanks for having me. Thank you.
All right, guys. We'll be right back, and we'll talk about the Trump mess and who should be the Democratic presidential nominee. That should be interesting as well. All right, guys. How's that for fun, huh? Look, so some of you probably get the importance of that, that we got a US congressman who's now just a Democrat. Some of you, understandably, if you don't live in Washington, might be like, oh, okay, that makes sense. That's cool. No, in Washington, power is everything. And so when a US congressman says he's going to be part of a new wing of the Democratic Party, that's a huge deal. So let's see what happens now. Brace for impact. So justdemocrats.com, man. Go join up. Takes 10 seconds to join up and say I'm on this side of the Democratic Party. Strong progressives, uncorrupted by PAC money or lobbyist money. So, and then, you know, if you want to donate, great. If you want to help Paul Swearengin running against Joe Manchin, great. Cori Bush running against Lacey Clay, great. There's going to be more announcements from Just Democrats soon. So now let me read a couple of tweets for you guys on this. Juan A. Delgado says, big announcement from the Young Turks, Congressman Ro Khanna joins Justice Dems as their first sitting congressman. Drew says, a sitting congressman is now a member of the Justice Dems. The Joe Manchins of the world must be thinking, ro-ro. Okay, Amy Randall says, can Representative Ro Khanna be my congressperson in Wisconsin's 7th District, please? Probably not, Amy, but thank you for asking. Okay, so we still have a giant, giant show ahead for you guys. So let's get going. Let's go to Trump and Comey, okay? So yesterday, Donald Trump fired Jim Comey, who's the director of the FBI, who also happens to be doing an investigation of the Trump campaign and their connections to the Russians. Sure, it's a wild coincidence. But they say, no, you don't understand. They wrote in their letter, the attorney general and the deputy attorney general did. No, it's because of what Comey did to Hillary Clinton. Now, these are the same people who were chanting, lock her up, lock her up. But they say, oh, the way that he mishandled the situation, doing a press conference, explaining all the things that Hillary Clinton did wrong, but not charging her. And they apparently thought the Democrats would be happy about this. No. That was a long time ago. He's now in the middle of an investigation of the president. When the president fires him, of course, people are going to think, it's not what he did to his opponent, which he seemed to love and which we'll prove to you right now. But it's because of what James Comey was doing to Donald Trump in terms of the Russian investigation. So now they say, they're shocked and chagrined by what he did to Hillary Clinton. Back then, though, they seemed pretty happy when Comey announced 11 days before the election that that he was reopening the Hillary Clinton investigation. Here's what Donald Trump had to say.
Because he wasn't doing a good job, very simply. He was not doing a good job.
Sorry, that was what he said today. So today he says Comey's not doing a good job. Earlier, that was not the tune that he was singing. So let's go to Donald Trump quotes from back in the campaign. Now, this was earlier in the campaign. He says, well, I hear fantastic. I don't know, Comey, I hear fantastic things, beyond fantastic. I can say that I hope he is straight up. I think if he's straight up, that she's not going to be able to run. Now, that was before Comey announced that he was not charging Hillary Clinton. But at that point, Trump thinks he's beyond fantastic. Then he decides not to charge her, but berates her. Then he decides 11 days before the election, hey, you know what? I'm reopening the investigation. At that point, Trump has this to say. I have great respect for the FBI for righting this wrong. The American people fully understand her corruption, and we hope all justice will finally be served. This is the biggest political scandal since Watergate. That's funny and ironic. And I'm sure that it will be properly handled from this point forward. Okay. Turns out there might have been a little bit larger scandal than the Hillary Clinton one, and that might be the Donald Trump one. So he went on to say at another gathering, he said about Comey, he brought it back. He's got to hang tough because there's a lot of people want him to do the wrong thing. What he did was the right thing. Now, I'm telling you that today because today their claim is that they're firing James Comey for what he did to Hillary Clinton. Preposterous. At the time, they loved it, and there's your quotes explaining how much they loved it and how much they thought it was the right thing, but I'm not done yet. Then we go to Reince Priebus. Now, this was after they already got elected. He said, Trump has confidence in Director Comey. We have had a great relationship with him over the last several weeks. He's extremely competent. And it goes on to talk more about him. Okay. Then we're going to go to Sean Spicer. Now, Sean Spicer, this was not after the election. This was not right before the election. This was last week. That's the White House press secretary. He said, the president has confidence in the director. Okay, so that is very, very clear. Now, let's go back to the campaign. And after the announcement that that Comey was reopening the investigation on Hillary Clinton. And let's listen to again, Trump and Jeff Sessions, who of course now is the attorney general who fired Comey. Watch.
Lou, I don't think it's a little bitty matter. Yeah. I don't believe he would re-announce this unless he thought there was something pretty darn serious here that he had to tell the American people about rather than keep it secret. Because if it's different from what he told the Congress in his testimony and the American people, then he had to correct.
FBI Director Comey did the right thing. When he found new evidence, he had no choice but to report to the American Congress where he had under oath testified the investigation was over. He had to correct that and say this investigation is ongoing now.
And I have to give the FBI credit. That was so bad what happened originally, and it took guts for Director Comey to make the move that he made in light of the kind of opposition he had where they're trying to protect her from criminal prosecution. You know that. It took a lot of guts. I really disagreed with him. I was not his fan. But I'll tell you what he did, he brought back his reputation. He brought it back. He's got to hang tough because there's a lot of people want him to do the wrong thing. What he did was the right thing.
What he did was the right thing. Sessions not only said it was the right thing, he had no choice. That's the thing that they're claiming they're firing him for today. Look, if you're going to fire James Comey because he's investigating you, at least bother to think up of a decent excuse for 5 minutes. I mean, that's the best excuse you guys could come up with. The thing that you praised him for to no end earlier, and that you feel so aggrieved for what happened to Hillary Clinton under James Comey, that's why you fired him. That is the world's worst excuse. Now, if that's not bad enough, we found a video of Donald Trump after he's elected, they're in the Oval Office, blowing a kiss to James Comey. Now you think, okay, this is the beginning of a joke and we're gonna show you some other video. No, we're not kidding. We're gonna show you the actual video. This is the guy he says, now at this point he already knows what he did to Hillary Clinton. Later he would claim that they're so upset at how he handled the Hillary Clinton investigation that they had to fire James Comey. But they already know it when this is happening. Watch.
Oh, and there's James. He's become more famous than me.
Director Comey. Oh, and there's James.
He blew a kiss at him. Now he's saying, oh yeah, I was so mad at James Comey for what he did to Hillary Clinton. After I blew a kiss at him, then I decided to fire him. Coincidentally, after he asked for more funding for the investigation of me and my ties to Russia. Does anyone in their right mind believe that? Even if you're a conservative, deep right winger, do you really think, oh man, he's just sticking up for Hillary? You don't believe that. You know why he fired Comey. He fired Comey because he was looking into Trump and Russia. It is the most obvious thing in the world. Maybe the last guy to investigate Trump, right before he puts the handcuffs on, could go, Okay. So now we move on to what happened right before, okay? So, what precipitated Donald Trump firing the FBI director James Comey? Now, we all know, we've gone over this, that James Comey was looking into the Russian ties of the Trump campaign and possibly the Trump administration and possibly Donald Trump himself and perhaps financial dealings. So now what we find out today is the internal proceedings and what was happening inside the White House. As usual, leaks inside the White House, senior advisors to the president talking to the press, in this case Politico. So let's dive in there and see what happened. They explained Trump's firing of high profile FBI director on the 110th day after the president took office marked another sudden turn for an administration that has fired its acting attorney general, national security advisor, and now its FBI director, whom Trump had praised until recent weeks and even blew a kiss to during a January appearance. Indeed. So now that's a lot of folks fired or recused because of the Russian investigation. And you still think there's no pattern at all? Well, let's go further in and find out what was happening behind the scenes. They say that President Trump had grown enraged by the Russia investigation. Two advisors said, these are not advisors to Politico, they're advisors to President Trump. Now, frustrated by his inability to control the mushrooming narrative around Russia, he repeatedly asked aides why the Russia investigation wouldn't disappear and demanded that they speak out for him. He would sometimes scream at television clips about the probe, one advisor said. Look, this guy's totally unhinged. Even his own guys know that he's unhinged. And look, if it was a no big deal issue, is he gonna be in a rage saying, why won't it go away, and yelling at the TV? Well, the dude's so unhinged, it's possible, I suppose. But more likely, the things that he gets most mad at are the ones that are truest, the ones that have the most facts behind them, and the things that he is most worried about. So they explained Trump had grown angry with the Russia investigation, particularly Comey admitting in front of the Senate that the FBI was investigating his campaign, and that the FBI director wouldn't support his claims that President Barack Obama had tapped his phones in Trump Tower. So he feels like, well, if I'm the president, you have to just do whatever I tell you to do, and if I tell you to lie, you have to lie. If I say Trump tapped my phones and it's not true, your job as the FBI director is to go out and lie to everybody. And when Comey didn't do that, he's super mad. And what are you investigating me for? I'm your boss. I'm not gonna allow you to investigate me. And you might find something. No. See, he still thinks he's running a family business. He's like, why would I allow one of my employees to investigate me? Of course I'm a crook. Look at what I did at Trump University. Look at what I did with the casinos and all the bankruptcies. What, this is so silly. No, if I've got a guy investigating me and he's my employee, I fire him so that he can't find out what kind of a crook I am. He's like, no brainer, I got it. But that's not how the government works. Because you're not just working for yourself, you're supposed to be working for all of us. So we have to make sure that you're working for us and not for your own financial interests or whatever other deals that you might have done. And the FBI director is not your lackey. He is not some lower level employee at Trump Tower that you could just fire when he annoys you by investigating you. Okay, now we're gonna get into how much Donald Trump misunderstands the world. you're going to see what a knucklehead he is here based on what he thought was going to happen. Okay. They explain that the fallout seemed to take the White House by surprise. Trump made a round of calls around 5 p.m. asking for support from senators. Wait, you fire the FBI director investigating your ties to Russia, and it surprises you that people are not on board with that? That they're a little concerned about that? He was even surprised the Democrats were pissed. Oh my God, that's so unbelievably stupid. Listen to this. White House officials believed it would be a win-win because Republicans and Democrats alike had had problems with the FBI director, one person briefed on the administration's deliberations said. You think that you're going to fire the sitting director for investigating you and Democrats are going to go, oh, that's a win-win, yeah. Way to go, Donnie. That is so stupid. Even if you're on Donald Trump's side, how could you not see that that would cause everybody to go, whoa, you just fired the cop looking into you. That means that there's an excellent chance you're guilty. That's, even if he isn't guilty, how could you not see that that's what everybody would think? That would be the natural conclusion. Oh, I thought the Democrats would like it if I fired the guy investigating me. Oh, I'm telling you, he is way, way dumber than anyone else thinks. He's everything. Who knew healthcare was complicated? Who knew North Korea was complicated? Who knew that if I fired the guy investigating me, that people wouldn't like that? I thought they'd like it. I thought they'd be a win-win. You did. The thing is, guys, what's amazing is he did think that. He is that dumb. Okay. Instead, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer told him he was making a big mistake. And Trump seemed, quote, taken aback, according to a person familiar with the call. You called the leader of the opposing party and you tell him you're firing the guy investigating you. And he's like, dude, I don't think that's a good idea, right? And you're like, what? You're not happy about that? Well, that's so weird. Who is that stupid? It's unbelievable how stupid he is. He thought Chuck Schumer would be happy about the news. Okay. By Tuesday evening, the president was watching the coverage of his decision and frustrated. No one was on TV defending him, a White House official said. Now, so this is Joffrey, right? The child king. So he's like, why is nobody defending me when I fired the guy investigating me? Why don't you go out there and defend me? Because it's a stupid, knuckleheaded move to do. Look, the only way that it's dumber than if he's guilty is if he's not guilty. If he actually doesn't have a deal with the Russians, firing James Comey is so, like, that's even dumber than I could even imagine. If somebody's investigating you and you didn't do it and you fired him, the message that you send to everybody is, I likely did it. Oh my God. But the reality is, of course he did it. Of course he did it. And you think this guy's smart enough to cover his tracks? No, there's going to be documentation everywhere. If it's not Comey, it's going to be somebody else. I know he's going to put in the one of his henchmen to be the head of the FBI, Giuliani, Christie. Maybe he'll put in one of his knuckleheaded sons. Maybe he'll put Bo Dietl in. Okay, I don't know. It doesn't matter. There's too many people at the FBI who have access to that. There's also people at the Treasury Department who have access to your financial records, you idiot. What? Man, these investigations are more complicated than I realized. Okay, so then he goes, he gets mad, of course, the child does, and he starts tweeting. The Democrats have said some of the worst things about James Comey, including the fact that he should be fired, but now they play so sad. He's the president, he's writing things like they play so sad. God, if you're proud of this guy, you're one of the saddest people I've ever met. Like, oh yeah, I like it when the president's a baby. And you should go, why would he be defending me? You guys are playing so sad. And then one more, he says, Comey lost the confidence of almost everyone in Washington, Republican and Democrat alike. When things calm down, they will be thanking me. What's amazing about that is, I'm telling you right now, you think like it's him being like bragging and saying outrageous things to get people. No, no, he believes it. He is so stupid. I know I've said it many times, but I can't say it enough. He is such a child that he's like, no, they'll thank me. No, they'll thank me later. This will work out great. This, you know, when they, yeah, no, no, no. I thought it was going to be a win-win. I didn't know being president was going to be this complicated. I didn't know doing a financial deal with the Russians and then you know, doing whatever they wanted when I become president would be this complicated and I would get caught. I didn't know that. You'll be thanking me later. My guess is thanking you is not what we're going to be doing later. Okay, now let's go to the investigation and what prompted all of this. Okay, so Comey, the FBI director, fired. Now let's figure out why it happened now, because they did it in a panic. Sean Spicer wasn't ready. Nobody was ready. They didn't have their talking points down. They hadn't called the senators. They fired Comey without even telling him. They sent one of Trump's private security guard goons to the FBI to deliver a manila envelope. What are we, in the mob? They didn't bother calling Comey. Comey finds out when the TV behind him says that he's been fired while he's out here in LA. And so why did they panic? And all of a sudden, with no replacement, no plan, all of a sudden, you're fired, right? Well, let's get into that now. CNN reports Senate Russia investigators have sent a request to the Treasury Department's Criminal Investigation Division for any information related to President Donald Trump, his top officials, and his campaign aides, the top Democrat on the Senate Intelligence Committee told CNN on Tuesday. Now, the Treasury Department is where they have the information on financial dealings. Oh, now this is where it gets interesting. Now, my leading theory on this was that he made not just, hey, you know, you guys help me win the election, Russia, with some, you know, you do some leaks, etc. And then, you know, I'll be nice to you guys and I'll be more inclined in your direction. What I'd been telling you guys is, no, he made a financial deal with the Russians. Now, that was my best guess. Obviously, you have to prove that out. That's what Comey was in the middle of doing. And they were also looking at the Treasury Department to see if they could find such a financial deal. That's when Trump panics. So now Mark Warner is that leading Democrat on the Intelligence Committee, and he says, you get the materials that show if there have been what level of financial ties between, I mean, some of the stuff, some of the Trump-related officials, Trump campaign-related officials and other officials, and where those dollars flow. Says not necessarily from Russia. Well, you know, he's doing an investigation and he doesn't have those facts yet. That's why he asked for the information. My guess is it'll be from Russia. That's why he fired Comey. He's like, no, I don't find out any of that. Okay, now FinCEN is the specific part of the Treasury Department that has that information. So CNN explains, FinCEN is the federal agency that has been investigating allegations of foreign money laundering through purchases of US real estate. That's exactly what we've been telling you about on the Young Turks. Trump has all these properties. In some of the cases, he happens to sell them to Russians at outlandish prices, way above what he bought them, way above the market value. One of his knuckleheaded sons, Eric Trump, brags to a golf writer a couple of years ago about, oh yeah, we got the loans for all the golf courses from the Russians. And so all that information would be at FinCEN, or a lot of that information in the Treasury Department. So on the one hand, Comey's investigating the FBI. On the other hand, the Senate Intelligence Committee is asking for that information from the Treasury just recently. Okay, all this is happening at the same time. Now, The Hill explains Trump also insisted that Comey's firing did not impact a discussion Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov and Moscow's ambassador to the US, Sergei Kislyak, earlier in the day. So that happened today. So he fires Comey the day before he was going to talk to the Russians. Then he has a Russian ambassador in and the Russian foreign minister. Remember, Kislyak, the ambassador, is the guy that Mike Flynn, our former national security advisor, had the conversation with and told him that, hey, this is what we think is going to happen with the sanctions. Then Mike Flynn lied, saying that they didn't talk about the sanctions. And that's why Mike Flynn was fired and stepped down from being national security advisor. So that same Russian ambassador comes in and talks to Trump right after he fires Comey. It's like, yeah, that's very good. Nice job, Donald. Donnie, very good in covering your tracks, okay? Donnie's like, oh, he did a good job. I thought it was going to be a win-win, okay. Former FBI director James Comey reportedly, this is also happening recently, now we're at the Hill again, requested more money and personnel for Bureau's investigation into Russian meddling in the 2016 presidential election days before he was fired by President Trump. Now, the plot thickens. So he's asked for more money to do further investigations. Trump finds out. A couple of days later, he's gone. Now, Trump, in his letter to Comey, wrote this hilarious sentence. He said, "Well, I greatly appreciate you informing me on three separate occasions that I am not under investigation. I nevertheless concur with the judgment of the Department of Justice that you are not able to lead the Bureau." Why would you write that in a letter if it has nothing to do with the Russian investigation? First of all, of course it's not true. There's no independent confirmation that James Comey has ever told Donald Trump that he's not under investigation. And according to Freedom of Information requests about documents related to that, they say that it might be under investigation, things that Donald Trump has said. So, of course, as usual, not true. But that's that sentence right there is "I'm not a witch" moment. Remember when this Senate candidate in Delaware for the Republicans, Christine O'Donnell, did this ad starting with, "I'm Christine O'Donnell and I am not a witch." What the hell? Why are you a witch? Right? So when you say this is not about your Russian investigation of me, okay? And you told me that it's that I'm not being investigated anyway. And you're fired, so you can't talk about it. Okay. Yeah, I got it. And everybody got it. You're so dumb. Don't write that in the letter. It's a big red flag saying it's about the Russian investigation. But he's such a child that he thinks, "Oh no, if I write that it's not about the Russian investigation, they'll know it's not about that." Okay. Now back to CNN. CNN reports the news comes just a few days after the revelation that Senate investigators sent broad-based requests for documents to four key potential witnesses in their probe. Former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort, former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, former advisor Roger Stone, and former foreign policy advisor Carter Page. So requests for information and documents from those witnesses who might have had dealings with the Russians who are part of the Trump campaign. So walls are closing in. What does he do? He lashes out and fires the guy heading the investigation. Now back to Politico. They report, while shock dominated much of the FBI and the White House, the mood at Roger Stone's house in Florida was one of elation. Several Stone allies and friends said Stone, a Trump associate who's been frequently mentioned in the investigation, encouraged the president to fire Comey in conversations in recent weeks. So Roger Stone is asked by investigators for documents relating to the Russian investigation. He calls Trump, according to his own friends, and says, yeah, fire Comey so that he doesn't investigate us anymore. Trump fires Comey. Let's find out more about Stone. On Twitter, Stone signaled praise for the move by posting an image of Trump from The Apprentice saying, "You're fired." Stone declined to comment on Tuesday night, but said he was enjoying a fine cigar. These guys have no subtlety at all. So basically bragging about how they fired the guy who was investigating them. If I was you, I'd put that cigar away. You might be celebrating a tad too early. If you think there are no honest people in the country who can continue that investigation, and that there won't be any leaks about what they found out with Trump and Stone and all the other guys and how they made a deal with the Russians, I think you are sorely mistaken. All right. Now, there's so many stories on this. Okay. Let me go to, I got to take a break, right? Okay, let's take a quick break. Turns out Sean Spicer might get fired, and then I'm going to tell you who should run for president on the Democratic side. I figured it out. Interesting. Come right back. All right, back on the Young Turks. Jessica Allison writes in the kiss of death, the press secretary saying he has the full confidence of the president. Yeah, Jessica, good point. Who do we go into next here? Derek Martin with a super old school reference. Donald Trump is so politically tone deaf, he's the William Hung of presidents. I like that old school reference. All right, Jessica B says Donald Trump has blatantly gotten away with incompetence without consequences. Figured this bullshit excuse firing Comey would work too. Well, it's true, he's gotten away with everything, so he thought this would. But this is a different thing, that's why I'm telling you, he doesn't get it. Anyway, Platypus Custer says maybe Trump will tap, no pun intended, his other daughter to run the FBI. Yeah, I didn't say it. Okay, now let's keep going. So, of course, some Republicans step up to defend Donald Trump after the Comey firing. Mitch McConnell goes in front of cameras and goes, what? What independent counsel? What special prosecutor? No, of course not. Nothing to look at here. And then Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who is the deputy press secretary, now filling in for Sean Spicer, apparently soon to be fired. Well, we'll see how that turns out. Anyway, comes in with what investigation? Watch.
A lot of the analysis concerns investigation. How will the firing of Comey affect that?
I don't think it affects it at all in any capacity whatsoever. You've still got the same people that would be carrying out that, whether it's through the Department of Justice, that process continues. But I think the bigger point on that is, my gosh, Tucker, when are they going to let that go? It's been going on for nearly a year. Frankly, it's kind of getting absurd. There's nothing there. We've heard that time and time again. We heard it in the testimonies earlier this week. We've heard it for the last 11 months. There is no there. It's time to move on. And it's frankly, it's time to focus on the things that the American people care about. They're not worried about this false narrative that the media continues to want to drive.
He just fired Comey. Time to move on already. I mean, why are we still talking about this, right? So, of course, the president's loyalists will come out there and say absurd things like that. Now, on the other hand, there were plenty of Republicans who were like, I don't know, man, this looks pretty bad. Richard Burr is the head of the committee that is charged with investigating this, and he's a Republican, but he wrote, I am troubled by the timing and reasoning of Director Comey's termination. Like, really, we're firing him because of what he did to Hillary Clinton? I'm troubled by that very weak ass excuse. And why now, after we've known about that for months and months? Okay, Jeff Flake says, I've spent the last several hours trying to find an acceptable rationale for the timing of Comey's firing, I just can't do it. That is a sitting Republican senator going, there's no rationale for this. Of course he fired him because he was investigating Trump, not because of what he did to Hillary Clinton earlier. John McCain said he was, quote, disappointed with what happened. He went on to say the removal of Director Comey only confirms need for a select committee to investigate Russia's interference in the 2016 election. Now, what did I tell you guys? Once the Republicans start heading for the doors, that's when you know Trump's in a lot of trouble, because Republicans will stick together almost no matter what. If they're now all of a sudden tiptoeing backwards, like, and what did I tell you was the first step? Jason Chaffetz in the House. He's the guy who's supposed to be investigating Trump in the House, and he's a Republican. All of a sudden, he's like, I gotta go. I'm thinking of retiring. Yeah, he's a young guy. A lot of ambition, maybe a run for governor of Utah later, but for him to all of a sudden, and then at first he was like, yeah, I gotta go, right? I'm gonna leave. And everybody thought it was at the end of his term because his term just started. And then the next day he comes out, he's like, no, you don't get it, not at the end of my term. I gotta go right now. Because he doesn't wanna be stuck investigating Donald Trump, it's a lose-lose for him. So now that's one of Trump's allies. A lot of these guys, not so much allies, right? Flake is, never ginned to Trump to begin with. They've had interactions back and forth that were not pleasant. And then John McCain, of course, you remember what Trump said about him. I prefer people who weren't captured, said the guy who never went to Vietnam. Okay, so that's Donald Trump, got five deferments. Now, he ran against Governor Kasich in Ohio. Here's what Kasich had to say. He said, I am extremely troubled by the circumstances surrounding the dismissal of FBI Director James Comey, who has served this nation honorably. Both parties in Congress must put partisanship aside and put our country first to ensure there are full and fair investigations into Russia's effort to influence our election. So now this is step two. Step one is when allies start backing away, like Richard Burr and Chaffetz, and they're like, oh, I gotta go, right? Step two is the Republicans he pissed off earlier are like, oh, payback's a bitch. When he loses Paul Ryan, who has never liked him in the first place, but knows that if he crosses Donald Trump, there's a huge price to pay with his base. When he loses Paul Ryan, it's over. That's when you know the resignation is coming. He hasn't lost them yet. That's step three. All right, one more quote for you guys from the House, where Ryan is. Justin Amash, he's another significant right winger, but again has had some disagreements with Trump in the past, says, my staff and I are reviewing legislation to establish an independent commission on Russia. The second paragraph of this letter, referring to Trump's letter firing Comey, is bizarre. Referring to how he's like, now Comey told me in private 3 different times he's not investigating me in Russia. He told me. Why would you write that? And of course, it's bizarre. And by the way, a sitting president is not supposed to be talking about ongoing investigations. So we've already gone through 2 steps of what it's going to take to get Trump out. And these are the things I laid out for you ahead of time. And these are the things that are happening today. So those were your markers for if Donald Trump is in trouble, this is what will happen. 2 out of the 3 has happened. When Paul Ryan pulls the chute, Trump is done for. So look for that next. We already have a poll out, tytnetwork.com/Trump. Is Donald Trump done? I already voted yes. So Paul Ryan will be the final nail in the coffin. But I can see where this train is headed. And it's not headed for a good place for Donald Trump. Okay. Now let's go to Sean Spicer. Okay. So yesterday, Sean Spicer is told by the president, oh, by the way, I fired James Comey. Good luck trying to explain that. Go ahead. And he said, what just happened? Okay, he's the White House press secretary. And of course, Trump stumbled into it without any plan at all. And now Spicer has to somehow figure out how to deal with this. So he's put in an incredibly awkward situation. And there's press all around him when all of this stuff breaks, when the news breaks. And there's cameras right around the set of bushes. So he goes with a couple of aides and hides behind the bushes. All right, this is going from bad to worse, right? And then an incredibly awkward interaction with the press happens, which I'm going to tell you about in a second. But today we find out the president was not happy with how Spicer handled this, and he's in a world of trouble. So let's go to Jim Acosta's tweet from CNN. White House sources, highest levels, including president evaluating Sanders, that's Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the deputy press secretary, subbing for Spicer in briefing room last night, quote, embarrassment, disaster. So the reason you're seeing Sarah Huckabee Sanders all over TV right now is because they've pulled Spicer. The president is so mad at how Spicer handled the situation last night that he's now having Sanders try out in basically in prime time. It's go do all of these. I mean, look at how important this is, right? Spicer's not on vacation. This is as important a story as it gets. You just fired the FBI director investigating you. So when Spicer's not out there, yeah, that's a vote of big no confidence. By the way, one other thing the press is not talking about that might be happening, and I don't know, okay? I grant you that this is speculation. Maybe Spicer is uncomfortable defending Trump for firing the director that was investigating him. If you have any morality at all, and I don't know that Sean Spicer does, you could be uncomfortable trying to defend that horrific position. And by the way, if you fired Comey, likely he had something on you. Likely you're gonna get caught. Anyone with, even if you don't have morality, with any common sense, pulls the chute and gets the hell out of there and goes, I don't do it, man. I left as soon as he fired Comey. So I don't know which way it goes. We do know that Trump is mad at him. Let me give you more details on that. According to CNN senior White House correspondent Jim Acosta, who cites 2 unnamed White House officials as his sources, quote, officials at the highest levels, including the president, are, quote, monitoring Huckabee Sanders, who will conduct the briefings for the rest of this week. Those officials, including the president, were reportedly not pleased with how Spicer handled the release of the news of Comey's termination. Now, then we go to the Washington Post, and they explain that awkward interaction last night. They say that Spicer, quote, spent several minutes hidden in the bushes. Okay, and then when he comes out, he tells everybody, turn the lights off, turn the lights off, I don't want any lights. And he won't talk to any of the reporters until they all turn their lights off. I think there's a metaphor in there somewhere. Okay, whatever you do, I don't want the spotlight on this issue. Okay, so then they ask him, when's the last time Trump and Comey spoke? His answer, I don't know. There's some, I don't know. Okay, that's pretty bad. Now, I'm going to defend Sean Spicer. You know why? One, he doesn't know. Okay, I'm not kidding. Like, the moron in chief, the president, goes out and fires this guy who's investigating him, doesn't tell Sean Spicer anything, doesn't tell him the last time that he met with James Comey, doesn't tell him, doesn't give him a battle plan, then goes out there and goes, come on, go defend me, make everyone like me. What? That's an impossible job. What you did was incredibly stupid and incredibly corrupt. And then you put Sean Spicer out there and go, okay, now I tell the press what a wonderful thing it was. What that you, that's not doable. So look, Sean Spicer is not a guy that I have a lot of sympathy for, but this is an impossible situation that he was put in. So if they wind up firing him, they're actually doing him a huge favor. So Sean, you might be annoyed now that you've been sidelined when they got Sarah Huckabee Sanders in there. But if I was you, I'd be counting my blessings, man. And go, I'd go into the president and be like, oh, I'm so sorry I let you down, that I couldn't defend you firing the guy investigating you. I'm gonna have to submit my resignation. Get out of there, man. Here's my message to Sean Spicer. Somebody take a picture of me. Get out. Okay, random reference to the movie Get Out. Okay. Quick one on Blumenthal. Let's do that real quick. Okay. Richard Blumenthal is a senator that's on the Democratic side. He thinks Comey getting fired is a disaster. Here he is on TV.
I've been calling for the deputy attorney general to appoint a special prosecutor. He's the one to do it in the Department of Justice because the attorney general has recused himself. And I still hope that Rod Rosenstein will redeem himself and appoint a special prosecutor that's easily possible under existing regulations. What's needed is an independent, objective, impartial prosecutor, because only a prosecutor can bring criminal charges and hold accountable the people who may have committed treason or fraud or lied to the FBI. And obviously, the president is a potential target. Indeed, I think one of the very revealing parts of Jim Comey's testimony at the Judiciary Committee was when he refused to rule out the president as a potential target.
Wow. So now Richard Blumenthal at the end there is referring to when Comey was in front of the Senate and Blumenthal asked him, can you rule out the president as one of the people you're investigating? And he refused to answer that, meaning, yeah, he's a potential target. Those are heavy words that Blumenthal used. Treason, fraud, the president is a target of the investigation. So now Donald Trump gets super mad at that and of course throws a temper tantrum. Now, is he going to attack Blumenthal on any of the substance? Of course not. You know what he's going to do, he's going to attack Blumenthal on something random. So when Blumenthal was running in 2010, there was a so-called controversy about his record in Vietnam. He had said that he served during the Vietnam War, which actually is true, he was a Marine reservist. Now remember, when liberals said, hey, Bush didn't actually go to Vietnam, he was in the National Guard Reserve, Republicans were like, how dare you besmirch the honor of the reserve? Okay, so now Blumenthal in a similar situation, actually a much better one than George W. Bush was. Now let's see if Donald Trump believes that it's the same thing as serving in Vietnam and that he honors the reserves, right? Instead he tweets, watching Senator Richard Blumenthal speak of Comey's a joke. Richie devised one of the greatest military frauds in US history. For years as a Pole in Connecticut, Blumenthal would talk of his great bravery and conquest in Vietnam. No, he didn't. Except he was never there. When he caught, he cried like a baby and begged for forgiveness. And now he's a judge and jury. He should be the one who's investigated for his acts. That's the president of the United States saying that a senator cried like a baby. We've elected a child. This is what third graders do. And I'm sorry, third graders across the country, for besmirching your reputation. And one final note, on Vietnam, Blumenthal was in the reserves in the Marines. Okay, what was Trump doing? 5 deferments. He got 4 for being in school. The 5th one, he was already out of school. And He said, oh, I have bone spurs. My daddy wrote me a letter saying, I got a doctor to write me a letter saying I've got bone spurs. They asked him during the campaign, which foot was it? He's like, the right one or maybe the left one, I forgot. Oh, that does sound like it was a debilitating condition. Did you cry like a baby? Okay. Now, finally, we go over to the Democratic side. I know lots of Comey news today. Comey and Khanna, that's what today was. All right. I was recently in Washington, and a lot of people understandably asked me, hey, you know, what do you think, Cenk? Who's going to run on the Democratic side in 2020 for president? It's a good question, and one I actually didn't have a great answer for, because when you get past Bernie Sanders, it's not entirely clear who would be the front runner. And then I thought, oh, wait, there is a guy who actually could. Oh, how about Bernie Sanders? Now, there's a reason why everyone, including me, by the way, I'll fess up to this, thought, well, no, it's not going to be Bernie Sanders. Why? Because it's conventional thinking. And I was guilty of it for a couple months here after the election. Well, Bernie Sanders is going to be too old. Well, let's investigate that. Yes, in 2020, when the election is, Bernie Sanders will be 79, right? But Donald Trump will be 75. Hillary Clinton, oh, God forbid, will be 73. A person who's often mentioned in these conversations, Elizabeth Warren, will be 71. They're all in their 70s. Now, let me ask you something. You take Bernie Sanders at 79 or Donald Trump at 75? You take Bernie Sanders at 79 or Donald Trump at any age? I'd take Bernie Sanders at 79 or 109 over Donald Trump at any age. So, look, guys, you got to get past the old ways of thinking. And so, when Bernie first started running, people were like, no, he's too liberal. No, in the old days, he's too liberal. And today, people want a progressive, they want someone who's honest. Yeah, he just keeps saying the same thing over and over. Yeah, you know why? Because he means it. That's not a disadvantage, that's an advantage. Oh, he looks all frumpled and his hair isn't combed. In the old days, that would have been a terrible disadvantage because all the politicians were slick and they're like, hello, everybody, right? These days, that's a disadvantage because we know you're a phony. It's a huge advantage for Bernie Sanders. So now, in the conventional way of thinking, they're like, well, Bernie Sanders will be too old. Really? I mean, people live really, really long lives now. He'll pick a great vice president. 79 is not that much older than 75. Presumably the person he'll be running against is Donald Trump, although I don't know if he'll make it. So I propose that maybe the most popular politician in the country is the one we should consider the front runner. I know, wild and crazy. So let me show you a recent headline. Bernie Sanders is the most popular politician in the country, according to a poll. The Harvard-Harris survey published first in the Hill found almost 60% of Americans view the Vermont senator favorably. Way ahead of Donald Trump, way ahead of Hillary Clinton, way ahead of everyone else, as you'll see in a second. In fact, if you say, all right, yes, but now look, remember he lost the primary to Hillary Clinton, who, by the way, had the entire establishment behind her, had the biggest brand name in Democratic Party history, okay? And he closed a 60-point lead anyway. So you say, oh, but he just, they have all this nonsense talking points against Bernie Sanders. Oh, he only gets white Democratic voters. Really? Well, let's look at the polling and see what happens. Among certain demographics, the progressive politicians' ratings are even higher. 80% of Democratic voters, 73% of registered black voters, 68% of registered Hispanic voters view Sanders favorably. So it turns out, no, he's doing wonderful. Even among Democrats and every kind of Democrat there is. Okay. Meanwhile, how's Hillary Clinton doing? Look, I know that we shouldn't even be having this conversation. Hillary Clinton, you already lost to Donald Trump. People in Washington are seriously considering it. No. Let me show you her numbers now. Her numbers now sitting at 35% favorable, 55% unfavorable. Bernie's at 60%, she's at 35%. I'll do quick math for you guys. That's a 25-point lead he has on her in favorability. This is not a conversation. So, there is someone who is the presumptive nominee of the Democrats, and it is very clear. I'll give you one more, though. Here's another poll. They looked at, so of all places, a Fox News poll. Even Fox News has to admit, Bernie Sanders, not only the most popular politician, the most popular anything in the country. They polled both politicians and issues and organizations in politics. Bernie Sanders came in number one, plus 29 positive. By the way, Donald Trump, minus 9. So if it's a Sanders versus Trump race in 2020, Sanders right now has a 38-point lead on him. 38. Now that's on the Fox poll that I just showed you. And then when you just look at flat out favorability, one versus the other, 61 to 44. Even there, a gigantic 17-point lead on favorability. That doesn't even take into account the unfavorable numbers that I was mentioning earlier. So who's the presumptive nominee for the Democrats in 2020? It's the most obvious question of all time. And by the way, I remember when Hillary Clinton was the presumptive nominee, and the entire Democratic Party told us that no one should run against her. Hey, we have a very similar situation here. Someone who is the most popular politician in the country, lucky you, he's on the Democratic side, and he just ran. Now remember, Hillary Clinton lost the primary in 2008. So that shouldn't be a problem at all. Losing a primary earlier, they still had Hillary Clinton as the presumptive nominee. She lost to Obama, so she was next up. It's not my logic. I believe in primaries. I believe everybody should run, okay, no matter who I support. But according to the Democratic Party establishment logic, Bernie Sanders would be up next. And the guy up next is incredibly popular. Lucky you, Democratic Party. So I assume that you will all now fall in line behind Bernie Sanders and tell everybody else that they shouldn't even get into the race. Let's see how that turns out. Young Turks.